Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharsky, Nick Kieser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Paul Kuharsky brought to you by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. We're talking all things Titans. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Mike Herndon from PaulKuharsky.com. Mike, good morning. How are we doing?
Doing great. Doing great. How are y'all?
Doing really well. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Mike, what's the number one thing that stood out to you in Titans preseason game number one as you were watching the game, watching the tape, and as we move ahead to joint practices this week?
I'd say as much as I enjoyed the Chance Campbell stuff, you know, I think my biggest takeaway really realistically from a guy that's really going to contribute was actually Tony Pollard. I thought Tony Pollard looked fantastic. He had great burst, looked like 2022, I guess it would be, Tony Pollard with the Cowboys. He looks fully back, and I think his ability to contribute in the passing game, which, you know, they're going to toggle with Tajay Spears, but the overlapping skill sets there, with both those guys being able to turn checkdowns into 8-yard gains on first down, for example, I think it's a huge deal for this offense, and I was really excited to see how well he played, and I thought he ran physically too. I thought he was a bright spot to me.
What's your concern level at edge rusher? You know, even without the Key suspension, you can make the argument they were thin there. Now with Key and his suspension, how do you view that spot, and what do you make of potential options that could be available should Rand Carthon at some point here decide to pursue that?
Yeah, I think it's a dire situation at this point. I thought they needed an edge rusher before Key's suspension because I don't view Key as a starter. And you know, look, it was a small sample size, but he was kind of invisible out there in the preseason game. He's okay. He's okay as a situational guy. I don't think you want him as an every down starter. So I thought the situation was bad. I think it's much worse because I don't think Rashad Weaver is anything you want as a starter. And then, you know, you go down the list and you get to, you know, Jalen Harrell may be the next guy up at this point, and he was a 7th-round pick a few months ago. So I think it's a bad situation. I think they desperately need somebody. I think you kind of saw that in the preseason game. They got almost – and really, I can't remember an example of them getting pressure with four in that game. They had to blitz to get any pressure – on the San Francisco quarterback. So I think it's pretty desperate that they add somebody. And look, the options aren't that great. You're talking about like Carl Lawson, which, you know, would be my favorite of the options out there. Yannick Ngakoue is another guy. I kind of personally think Yannick Ngakoue is a bit of a dog myself, as far as not a dog in a good way, a dog in the Jadeveon Clowney 2020 way. And that, yeah, I think he kind of chases sacks, and that's all he's really there for, and that's why he's been on six teams in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, whatever it is. So the options aren't great, but I do think some of those players are better than Rashad Weaver. So I do think it's worthwhile for them to add somebody, and you hope you can at least get something out of them, and hopefully that person can remain a piece of the rotation even when Key returns.
I retweeted your piece from yesterday with a lot of great clips from the game where you focused on the first team offense. Two of them are Nicholas Petit-Frere. I'm a backer of his. I see him as the starter on opening day. I don't see who's going to push him or knock him out of that spot. And I think last year was terrible, but I think sometimes guys have a year that's a wash. What did you see from him in this game, and what are you thinking about him as the starting right tackle?
I thought he was really good in this game, actually, and surprisingly so, because I kind of expected some growing pains with him coming back from the knee scope and obviously the offseason shoulder surgery and all that. I thought, you know, we're probably not going to see the very best Nicholas Petit-Frere out there on Saturday, but I thought he was really good. I honestly thought, short of Skoronski, he was probably their best offensive lineman in that game. So impressive start, exciting start for him. And I've always kind of been with you as far as the, he has the physical ability. You saw it his rookie year. Yes, there was inconsistency, of course. It drove me nuts how many times he got beat inside, on zone blocking plays to his side, where, a defender would just jump inside his inside arm and beat him and blow up a play for a loss. It drove me insane. But that's something that can be taught and coached. And I think maybe now with a little bit better coaching, we can see a little bit better Nicholas Petitfrere. I've always thought he had the talent, though. I mean, the guy was it's a long time ago, obviously, but the guy was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. He has physical ability. There's no question about that. And I thought he showed kind of what he can do in that preseason game, and you hope to see that continue, this week against Seattle.
Mike Herndon, who you can read at paulkuharski.com, our guest. What they ran almost entirely shotgun with Will Levis, and then that wasn't the case with Mason Rudolph and Malik Willis. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, and that's kind of one of my things I want to keep an eye on now this week with the Seattle game is, does that continue? Was that just them trying to get a look at a specific set of plays with the first team offense versus the second team and third team groups? Or is that a Will Levis comfort thing? Because what we know from what, Brian Callahan did with the Bengals, transitioning from Joe Burrow to Jake Browning, and what he's talked about extensively every time he's been asked about these things, is that he wants to tailor his game plan and the specific calls he's making to his quarterback's comfort level. So if Will Levis is more comfortable working out a shotgun, that could be the explanation, and I'm very interested to see if that trend continues. I don't think they're going to have the whole season where Will Levis never goes under center, but if he continues in that 80 to 85% shotgun range, that's a big change from last year. I think the Titans were right around 50-50 shotgun versus under center last season. So that's definitely a big shift, and it's interesting because, it allows you to do different things. It allows you to keep your eyes downfield more, not turning your back to the defense, that kind of thing. So if that is something he's comfortable with, obviously I think it's a good thing if they're leaning into that.
Mike, Tavondre Sweat has made some loud plays during camp, not so much in the game on Saturday against San Francisco. What did you make of what you saw from Sweat? And as somebody who's watched a lot of Sweat play football, what do you make of what the opportunity is in front of him now with this defense alongside Jeffrey Simmons once we actually see the complete picture of that when week one rolls around?
Yeah, I thought Sweat was okay. The very first snap of the game when Kenneth Murray came on the blitz and got the hit on the quarterback and caused the incompletion, Sweat drew two blockers, was in the process of splitting them and actually drew the attention of the back. So he ended up drawing three blockers in that play, which opened up a huge lane for Kenneth Murray to just sprint through and tattoo the Niners quarterback there. So that was an impact play, even though he didn't do anything besides, be big and attract attention, which sometimes that's going to be what he needs to do. So there were other plays too. He overran one in a zone run play where he could have made a play. He just kind of overran his gap. So I didn't think it was a perfect debut. It wasn't a loud debut by any means. And I think we'll see better from Tavondre Sweat in other games, as we go on with this thing. But going back to his college, experience, and it'll be interesting this week with Byron Murphy being here, the other Texas defensive tackle that they kind of tag teamed over the last couple years for Texas. Byron Murphy got the higher draft pick, but unequivocally, Tavondre Sweat was the higher impact defensive tackle at Texas. He won the Outland Trophy, obviously best interior lineman on either side of the ball in college football last year. He's not a statistic compiler, but he is an impact player, and you'll see his impact all over the place as he continues to go. And it was littered all over the Texas tape, which is ultimately why he was, viewed as the best defensive lineman in football. So I think what we'll see from him moving forward will be better than what we saw from him Saturday night. But I didn't think it was an all bad debut. It was just kind of uneven, which, I kind of thought the same about J.C. Latham, too.
What do you think about Thomas Odukoya versus David Martin Robinson and Steven Stylianos? Getting into the weeds here, because I don't think there's a fourth tight end on the roster. But if you've got a first call up there, who's your guy?
You know, it's tough because it kind of depends on what you want. You know, that Odukoya certainly as a blocker, I think does a really nice job. I mean, he was good in this game again. In that phase and was good all preseason last year when he kind of started to draw some attention and buzz. So if you need a blocker, if you need a Y inline type guy, I think he's your guy. If you need somebody who can move and get downfield and make plays in the passing game, I think it's David Martin Robinson. And frankly, I thought David Martin Robinson did a nice job blocking as well in this game. So they're very different type of guys. What was interesting to me was Odukoya playing with the ones, and I'd be interested to know. I'm assuming he's placeholding there for Nick Vinette, for those three snaps. But that at least drew my attention a little bit to say, you know, hey, maybe they are going to give this guy an actual look for the 53. But I don't think I'm with you. I don't think they keep four as much 11 personnel as they're going to run. I don't think there's snaps for four guys, and that third guy is already going to be mostly a special teams contributor anyways. So I think they'll keep three, but to me, I think you probably maybe keep David Martin Robinson as your fourth if you're going to keep one of the two on the practice squad, simply because he gives you that Chig Okonkwo skill set and it gives you that like for like replacement if something was to happen to Chig at some point during the season.
They checked down a ton with Levis. I asked Bo Hardigree this, and he kind of scoffed. But I worry that in a check-down mentality that they're installing, they take away a little edge from him in terms of the cut it loose. When you watched Levis specifically, did you see him turn down anything that maybe he should have taken?
The only play that I saw where he turned a throw down, and I couldn't quite tell just because the route combinations were kind of overlapping and it's hard to tell what he was actually looking at. The play near the goal line when he ended up taking off and running, you know, and taking that big hit, which you wish he wouldn't have done. I thought he turned down an open Treylon Burks on that play. Treylon Burks was open on a post running kind of along the back of the end zone. Now, I think Levis may have been looking for the mesh route underneath between Tajay Spears and Tyler Boyd on that play. So it's hard to tell exactly where his eyes were because the mesh was in front of Burks' route. But Burks was open, and it appears that maybe he turned that down to instead try to escape the pocket and then ultimately running. So that's really the only throw I thought he turned down that he should have made. He made the correct decision on the other checkdowns to Ridley and to Pollard. And frankly, I think that's important growth for him. You don't want to see him just gunning it in there all the time. You don't want to completely neuter him either. It's a fine kind of balance that they need to strike there. But it's certainly I was excited to see his 2.8 average depth of target in this game as a big contrast to that 11.1 that he had last year, which was just not sustainable as a way to play offense.
Let's not be excited about 2.8. Let's get a little. Let's find a happy medium there.
Maybe six. We get to six. How about that?
That'd be nice. That'd be better.
Mike Herndon. You can check out his work at paulkuharski.com. Mike, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
We'll react to what Mike had to say. Take your thoughts on the Titans. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road. 1025-1063. The game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharski with me today on the program. Brought to you by Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. Be caller number 3-615-737-1025. Caller 3 will win a $50 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa as well. Make sure you're on top of that. 615-737-1025. Appreciate Mike Herndon from paulkuharski.com for being with us in the last segment. Interesting to get his thoughts on Tavondre Sweat. There's been a lot of buzz, a lot of positive buzz around T'Vondre Sweat in camp. What did you make of what you saw from him on Saturday, albeit in a limited sample size? And was it a little bit of pumping of the brakes of the T'Vondre Sweat hype that we've seen?
Yeah, I think it was. I think, you know, I talked to Tracy Rocker about it yesterday, and he said, you know, he's nervous at the start, and he eased into it and got better and all that. But we didn't see the incredible pocket push from him that we see at practice on a regular basis. And look, it's rare that a defensive tackle or nose guard gets this kind of focus. But all eyes will be on him today and tomorrow. Well, certainly I'll be paying close attention and want to see what he does against Seattle's interior offensive line. Man, he's a number two pick, and yep. So we're going to pay a lot of attention to him and Latham.
What did you make of Latham and the way that he played on Saturday? He gave himself a C after the game. I thought there were a few reps in there where he looked great.
Yes.
And then some where he got beat a little bit. But the thing is, like, I thought on the reps where he looked great, you can see, like, oh, man, like, he has a chance to be really darn good.
The great reps were really great. Balance and a complete understanding of positioning and hand usage and all of that, like you said, looks, you know, totally the part. And you know he and Bill Callahan are working on that. Very honest assessment of himself in the moment. Callahan was praising that, you know, when he's coming back and saying, I messed up, I did this wrong, I did that wrong, as opposed to needing to wait for a coach to explain those things to him. I think J.C. Latham is on a very good trajectory right now. And so I think at left tackle, left guard, center, you know, you have no trepidation at all. You know, and I'm higher on Petit Frere than most people. You know, I mean, he's not on par with those other guys, but, you know, if he's going to be one of your two weak links, I think he's got a chance. And the big question is Raiden's. I thought that, look, if you quit your job, you have to deal with the big manager. And Bill Callahan said that Sadiq Charles, that Rand Carthon dealt with all of that. But Sadiq Charles, like every offensive lineman, when he's spoken to us, praised Bill Callahan and talked about how much that meant. And Bill Callahan was the reason that Sadiq Charles was here.
Yep.
Because they overlapped in Washington and Callahan liked something he saw. And so I think it's very telling that Bill Callahan did not have any conversations with Sadiq Charles. And he didn't know it was coming. So then it's not on Callahan to approach him and say, hey, what's up? It's on Charles to tell his coach that something's up. And that he didn't say anything to Bill Callahan seems somewhat cowardly, seems like a strong word, but I think
it's a really strange situation.
I think it's a fitting word. Now, listen, all of us were cautious, I certainly was, of being sympathetic if something was going on with him. But Brian Callahan made it clear that nothing, that, you know, it's not going to take care of a sick parent or a issue with his children. I don't know if he has any or anything like that.
Yeah.
Lost his love for football. It happens. Seems to happen around here a disproportionate amount of time. And that he didn't go to the position coach that got him the contract here is very telling about the guy and very disappointing.
Very interesting point you brought up about the way they use Levis in the game on Saturday, the shotgun snaps. Do you read anything at all into that? Is that just the way things played out when you're starting the first drive on the 15 and you're trying to get some looks there in the red zone? How do you view the way they use Levis on Saturday?
Well, I'm just curious about the shotgun thing because of its bearing on the run game, you know?
Yep.
And so you want to see how well they run out of shotgun. But we've talked about the two new running backs not offering any kind of tell as to what the Titans are going to do. Well, if the two new running backs are on the field in the backfield with Will Levis in shotgun, you're really not telling people what you're going to do. And so that's something to monitor going forward to see how they run out of shotgun.
We'll take more of your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. We'll also get to a former Titan whose career has been torpedoed the last year. That's coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Kieser here with you. I got a four-pack of tickets to give away to the PBR Nashville Stampede Days at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Sunday, August the 18th. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a four-pack of tickets to the PBR Nashville Stampede Days at Bridgestone Arena on Sunday, August the 18th. PK, a former Titan in the news once again, released from the Miami Dolphins yesterday. That is Tyrre Tartt. So Tyrre Tartt went from, I'm not going to say a key piece, but a very prominent, noticeable piece of the Titans defense heading into last season, with the thought that potentially a nice payday was coming for him from a contract standpoint, to obviously problems with the Titans. He ends up on the Texans for two games, signs with Miami in the offseason, and now, before the second preseason game, has been released by the Miami Dolphins. This has been a heck of a tailspin for Tyrre Tartt over the course of really the last calendar year. What do you make of the Tyrre Tartt situation, how this has all gone down since he's left the Titans, and now him being released a couple of weeks into training camp by Miami? Is his career over in the NFL?
He might get one more chance, but I don't know. My understanding is Drew Rosenhaus ruined the guy.
Yeah.
He, started to get good and signed on with Rosenhaus, and Rosenhaus planted all kind of ideas in his head about how good he was and how much money he was going to make, and he started to change his behavior and act like he was that guy and he was owed something and entitled to something. It's just not how it works. You shouldn't act like that at all, but you certainly can't act like that before you get the bag. He pissed off Vrabel to the degree that guys – and look, he got to a point, a guy like Danico Autry, who's a very reasonable, calm, level-headed NFL veteran. You know, say what you will about his pending suspension here for a PED violation. But Danico Autry couldn't get through to him. I talked to Danico Autry when all this stuff was going down last year, and he just kind of said, it's sad. And so things came apart on the guy here when they could have used his help, certainly along Absolutely. That defensive line, to the point where they cut him. Houston had a lot of talent on that defensive line, so I think they kind of took a flyer on him that he could be, you know, potentially a guy they'd sign after they had him in house for a while, and it didn't work out that way. And I don't know how much guaranteed money he got in Miami, but it wasn't a lot. And
the timing of when they cut him is interesting. Like, to be cut this early for a guy that's played meaningful snaps and played well in the NFL. That's an eye-opener when you get cut as early as he got cut yesterday.
Yeah, it suggests a problem.
I've not seen anything specific that's come out as to why that is, but the timing would let you know that either he was a problem in the locker room, the effort was bad, maybe a combination of the two, I don't know. But the timing I thought was really interesting of when he got released.
Yeah, it's a sad story for him, and it's a sad story for Drew. That his entry into the picture coincided with this downturn. But I think it's unmistakable that Drew triggered some of this. And, Tyrre paid more money to his agent for promises of hitting the big time. Yep. And instead, he's on his way out of the league.
And now he's clearly not going to hit the big time. Like, the question now is he going to get another shot in the league? I mean, I don't think that the ability has just evaporated. Now, we got somebody on the text line saying the dude thought he was the next Aaron Donald, and it's a reality check. Like, there probably was some overinflation from Rosenhaus or from
the
himself
reality
or
check should have come when he got cut here.
You would think. You
not
would think.
Not two teams later. But when I mean, he didn't get the contract.
The big bag is clearly not coming now. I wonder, like, if you're a team out there, do you look at T.R. Tartt's tape and think that he's good enough to offset what has clearly been a problem off the field with him? I don't know.
And if you do, yeah, I mean, you're having him in and you're saying, you know, Floyd Reese had this with when they drafted Robert Smith, who, you know, played pretty effective defensive tackle for the Titans. But when they drafted him fifth, sixth round, he had a reputation. And I remember Floyd Reese telling it like, man, you got one chance here. And, you know, if you make me look bad and you don't come through for me, that's going to be it. And that's the kind of meeting somebody needs to have with T.R. Tartt. Now, Miami may have had that meeting with them, and it didn't come through. But, you know, if you're a team that believes in third chance and you're desperate for defensive tackle help, which could come during the season when somebody has an injury, you sit them down and say, look, this is last chance as far as we're concerned. Come in, go out there, play your ass off, and help us, or we'll cut you in 3 days if we don't see it.
Oh, and you bring up the Rosenhaus part of this. Like, I don't remember prior to last year there ever being any issues with T.R. Tartt. Now, again, I mean, he's not Jeffrey Simmons, so, like, this idea that he was going to get some huge payday I think is a little unrealistic from him. But I think he was certainly in line to have a nice contract. And, look, the Titans, quite frankly, could still use him. But when you're a problem off the field the way that he has been – It's amazing how quick things in this league can turn. I mean, a year ago, we're not even talking about any of this stuff.
Yeah, and he was one of those guys, you know, self-made guy, undrafted, free agent. I mean, he did not know what he was doing when he first got here.
Yeah.
And, you know, turned into a pretty effective situational guy. But turning into a pretty effective situational guy and thinking you're some kind of start, you know, if he had just kept doing what he was doing, he would have been one of those guys that got signed, you know, 2 weeks into free agency to a nice deal, and people would have said, who's that?
Yeah.
You know, which is the course that a guy like that should want to take. And Drew Rosenhaus fed him something more than that, and then he felt, it seemed to me, like people were mistreating him.
In other NFL news, J.J. McCarthy with a torn meniscus. Still no timetable for his injury. They're taking a look at it. Hoping, best case scenario, that he's out a few weeks. There is a chance, depending on the damage in there, that he could miss the entire season and could be out the whole year. Dylan on the text line asking, if you were the Vikings, would you call Ryan Tannehill? They do have Sam Darnold. They talked yesterday about Sam Darnold having a good camp, and you know, Kevin O'Connell likes what he's seen from him to this point. Do you think it would make sense for the Vikings to call Ryan Tannehill if, in fact, J.J. McCarthy is out for the entire season?
If he's out for the season, I might call him. But you have to wait and see what that is. And out for the season from a meniscus would be a pretty big deal. They'd have to go in there and find something worse than what the film is showing them on his knee. So I'd be surprised if it turned out to be that bad. I'm surprised they're saying that. So there must be some indication that maybe
there seems to be a little bit of concern there. Yeah,
maybe it's worse than they thought. But it seems like, I don't know, I haven't followed the Vikings that closely. I mean, I was expecting Darnold on opening day.
Yeah.
How about you?
I was expecting Darnold opening day. Now, I did think there's probably going to be a point, whether it's 5 games in, 10 games in, whatever it is, where McCarthy takes over. But Darnold's an interesting guy because, I mean, he was drafted so young. He went to the tire fire of the Jets, and that place is just an absolute dump. And he's played some good football when given the opportunity. But I think for sure they would have gone Darnold anyway to begin the season. The question I had was, at what point would McCarthy take over? Would it be this year? Or do they look around and say, all right, Patrick Mahomes set for a year. Jordan Love set for 3 years. Tua. I mean, all these different guys. Would they have gone that route with McCarthy for an entire year? I don't know.
That team has some talent, but it's in a division where, you know, everybody's expecting Detroit to pick up where they left off. I don't know if that's going to happen. Green Bay, there are high expectations in Green Bay, and there are high expectations in Chicago. If you're picking a team that's not going to be as good in that division, I think most people are probably picking Minnesota fourth, right?
Yep.
fourth with a potential, I would say, fourth with potential to surprise. Because one of those three teams is probably going to fall off or come up short of expectations. I don't know that the Bears are going to be as good as everybody's estimating. And I think Detroit, you know, could be primed for a fall. It's been a long time since Detroit was coming off an effective season.
Correct.
So there's a lot of psychology at play for the Lions. But it'd be interesting to see how Minnesota approaches this thing. I need to go look. Do you know who their third quarterback is?
I do not. I need to figure that out. The other question, going back to Dylan's thought on Tannehill, that I would want to know, like, if would Tannehill do that? Because, you know, he was on Diana Russini's podcast a couple weeks ago, and the way he made it sound was, yes, he is waiting for a call for a certain opportunity, whether that's – I mean, it's clear he wants to still be a starter. My question is, like, would he just go start for anybody, or does it have to be somebody that he feels like he's got a chance to win with? Now, Minnesota, they do have Justin Jefferson, and the idea of throwing to Justin Jefferson, I'm sure, would be very intriguing to any quarterback. But if Minnesota did call and they felt like Tannehill was a better option than Darnold, would he actually pick up the phone and want to go there? That would be my question of that, too.
Nick Mullins is their
who started a couple
third
games last
quarterback.
Year.
Jaren Hall, their fourth. So, I mean, you don't love it. But, I mean, Nick Mullins is about your average third quarterback in the league, yep, at this stage with, you know, what percentage of the league we think carry three? Half, two-thirds?
Maybe half at most, yeah. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Final thoughts with PK coming up next. We'll get to what he's looking for this week as the Titans take the practice field with the Seattle Seahawks. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. From our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Little Bush bringing this back in.
This was the final song of the Bush show on Friday night. I sent Rex Road the Everything Zen, the part of the opener. Told him to eat it.
He's a hater.
I don't understand how you hate the best of Bush.
I mean, this is a great song.
Guitar-driven rock and roll. I mean, are you for it or are you against it?
I mean, he's not here to talk today and discuss the Creed show last night, which I heard was just amazing.
Which
a lot of people I know at the Creed
was
show.
Was in the front row wearing
I'm
a
sure
mask.
He was. He probably was. Right there with a big sign that says, "I love Scott Stapp." That's Rex Road.
Probably had a backstage meeting with Scott.
Probably did. I feel like Rex Road...
That's why he's not here today. He's recovering.
Yeah, he's recovering from the Creed concert. A classic example of he doesn't like Bush, doesn't like Creed, because he thinks it's cool not to like those bands, not because they actually suck.
Yeah, and Bush and Creed are – I'm not a Creed guy either, but Bush, they got it done. That municipal arena, auditorium, whatever we call it, it's not a practical place to have concerts.
No, it is not.
Why did we build places round that hold rectangular events? I mean, it hosted hockey. It hosts basketball. Why is it round?
I don't know.
Why did we build round buildings? I understand it's old, but even in those days, basketball courts were
same shape.
Still rectangular.
Yeah, same shape. I got a text that says, won't more teams carry three quarterbacks with the emergency quarterback roster changes from last year?
Listen,
they had the rule last year, too.
Listen to me about this emergency quarterback roster change. Nothing happened forever. Then one guy, one game, two quarterbacks got hurt. Nothing has happened since.
Yep.
Why has everybody got to change their quarterback strategy? Because one time in thousands of games, two quarterbacks got hurt. I just don't see it. So you can have the third quarterback. But you're not going to need the third quarterback,
right?
So you change your strategy on your 53 with this? I don't understand what necessitates it.
Well, that's the thing.
When's the last time the Tennessee Titans needed a third quarterback? The answer is never.
Right. That's the thing. Like, it's still you still have to adjust your 53-man game day roster for it. It's not just some spot floating out in the ether that people
it's
think
not well, a 54th
you can just call him up from the locker room. No, you can't do that. Yeah, like you've got to adjust the game day for it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's really
still,
not.
Your 53 adjusts for it.
Right.
There's now, not he's available to play to if your first two quarterbacks got killed. Now, the Titans have had atrocious offensive lines the last 2 years, and they haven't needed a third quarterback.
That's true.
So what does that tell you about the necessity of this spot?
PK, what are you looking for as practice begins with the Seahawks today? What's one or two things that really going to be paying attention to this week as the Titans take the field against the Seahawks?
Well, Condre Diggs and Jamal Adams going against their old team is certainly will add some spice to this whole deal. And the Seahawks have intriguing receivers in DK Metcalf, in Tyler Lockett, and in Jackson Smith and Jigba. So you want to see how these DBs, who have been very good, handle these guys. L'Jarius Sneed practices very little. It'll be interesting if he gets one of these two practices and we see him go against these guys at all. That would be a nice bonus. But whoever's practicing, defending those guys will be interesting. Leonard Williams, the defensive tackle, is a player to watch and see how the Titans' offensive line handles them. Just, first and foremost, you watch the stars. And so I want to see how the Titans handle those guys. Charles Cross, in his second year, I believe, as the left tackle, pretty highly rated guy coming out. See how the Titans attack him and see what he does in one-on-ones if they have him. And then their interior offensive line, Lakeland Tomlinson, Olu Olawatomi, and Anthony Bradford are their three. See what they do against Tavondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons.
Yep, for sure. Going to be interested to see the right side of the offensive line too. How do they hold up this week as you get to – hit some other guys against another team and what that looks like in terms of can they hold their own? Are they dominated all week long? Does Dylan Raidens look like he can hold his own in the right guard spot as a starting right guard? Going to be interesting to see that part of it too. And I said it to begin the show. I think these weeks are really valuable for quarterbacks to look at different defenses, different looks, not knowing what's coming. And seeing how Will Levis reacts to that is going to be very interesting.
You want to stay healthy and you don't want to fight. Gerard Mayo put out a very good edict. I don't know if you guys talked about this. He said, if you're a starter and you fight, you play the whole preseason game.
Yeah.
And if you're not a starter and you fight, you don't play.
That's pretty good.
In the preseason game. Those are pretty good measures.
Well, and the Seahawks have already gotten into some dust-ups out there too. And just keep DK Metcalf's helmet away from people. Don't be swinging your helmet.
Yeah.
Never a good sign.
I'm going to give the Titans the benefit of the doubt here for being smart. These things can devolve in a bad way. Some of them have devolved around the country in a bad way to where they stop practicing against each other and just go to their own fields, which makes it worthless. They need good work out of this.
Well, and, you always, when some of these skirmishes happen, you always look and see if, is Jeffrey Simmons around?
Yep.
Jeffrey Simmons getting in the middle of all this? It would be good to see that not happen this week.
He is the centerpiece.
He is the centerpiece, no doubt about it. And continuing to be an interesting week for Treylon Burks. Now, it was last year. Burks was having a good camp, went up to Minnesota, got hurt. So can, number one, he stay healthy in the training camp practices? Joe's talked about this and him learning to fall a little bit better, but if he is healthy, how does he look against what is a pretty good secondary that Seattle brings to the table, too, and what is going to continue to be some opportunities for him while DeAndre Hopkins is out?
Yeah, definitely getting number one snaps there and needs to continue to take advantage.
I'm very interested also to see, you mentioned the Sweat part of this. It would be, I think, reassuring for a lot of Titans fans, too, if he gets out there and replicate some of what we've seen against the Titans offensive front in practice. If he does that against Seattle this week, I think you feel a little bit better if you're a Titans fan based off the preseason game that we talked about earlier. If Sweat goes out there and looks dominant against Seattle.
Yeah. But even if he doesn't, I think it's too early to kind of need reassurance off of that. But I expect that he'll have a big couple days and be a problem. He's a problem. He's gigantic and he moves well.
And you're that big, you move that fast, you're a problem. PK, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
Rex Road will be back with us tomorrow on
apparently,
the program.
Allegedly
on the program. I believe PK is going to be in next week. I don't know if he knows that or not yet, but we'll see. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll have you covered all day long. Chase and Big Joe coming up live from Titans training camp. You're listening to 102.5-106.3, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.